All right, so I want to welcome you. We are in week three of our series, Update Available. And what Paul is talking about in Colossians chapter 3, verse 17 verses, is an old versus a new self. He's talking about an old way of doing, an old way of thinking, an old way of feeling, an old way of being, versus a new way of all of those things. And our analogy is the update that we all run into, the unfortunate screen that shows up at some point in time, most of us on our phones now. Most of us don't. Every once in a while, if you've got a laptop or a desktop, you'll see something in a window pop up and say, updates available, critical updates. Install them now before this thing blows up in your face. If you don't do it, something terrible is going to happen. The world will come to an end. That's not true. We know that. We're talking about what it means to choose the new self, to update to this new way, and to leave the old behind. The old self runs on old software. It is software that focuses the user on frivolous details and prioritizes self. It prioritizes your old self, puts you on the throne of your life. It prioritizes you over everything and everybody. And it's corrupted. The old self, the old software, is corrupted mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. And it needs an update. When your phone or your software tells you it's time for an update, it will often give you a list, a bunch of promises, new abilities, improvements, bug fixes. And what it says is basically, it doesn't promise in so many words, but it says these changes are going to enhance the function of your device or your software. They're going to increase your productivity. Ultimately, they're going to decrease your frustration and probably generally improve the overall quality of your life. Like a phone can make your life better. But okay, it makes those promises. It says just say yes to the update. This whole new world will open for you. There was a thing that you couldn't do before, but now you can. And you can link it to other applications to streamline your process, digitize your monetization, and maximize your photosynthetic rate. Some of y'all got that. If you loved your message app before, now you can message in real time with multiple people in color-coded threads based on food preference. All the people that like pizza in this thread. All the people that like beats, get thee behind me, Satan, in this thread. Does your favorite app crash for no reason? Does your software lock up when you enter in what should be a valid command? This update not only provides improvements, new support systems, but it provides bug fixes that fix broken bits of codes that had no business being in there in the first place, and a thing that costs almost as much as a house payment. Calm down. I didn't used to read those updates because some of them were lengthy. I read them now because I want to know where my stuff is going to go. You update that thing and suddenly what used to be friendly apps now are very hostile. Now you have to tell them lots of things. Some of them want you to re-enter in. How many of you have 75 different passwords for your apps and you don't write those down? Now you've got to dig those back up. Nope. Now you've got to email yourself 75 different times so that you can have new passwords for all of these apps, which are brand new and great. You just can't get into them anymore. I feel a little combative this morning. I'm sorry, Apple. I'm sorry, Lord. I started reading the updates because I want to know what's going to happen. One update that I read had 52 instances of new supports, improvements, and fixes. I don't know if you've noticed yet, but we live in a world of never-ending updates, improvements, bug fixes, and patches. And it can be hard to tell. I'm going to back up out of the phone world for a second. Let's take a little bit of a broader view. It can be hard to tell if there's ever going to be an actual solution to any of our problems. Every time we think we make something better, something else falls apart. Every time we make an advancement in this area, it's not really an advancement because it's cost us in some other area. Is there ever going to be an actual solution to the problems that we have? Because the old self is a problem. It is constantly vying for your attention. It is constantly draining your resources, focusing you on things that don't need focus, bringing worry and concern and other stuff into your life based on things that are meaningless. The old self is a problem. We've been reading for the past couple of weeks that the Apostle Paul encourages us to put on the new self. And he offers 7 improvements, bug fixes, that are available in the new self. We're going to go to Colossians chapter 3. We're going to be in verses 12 through 14 today if you want to go ahead and go there. Just a quick review. If it happens to be your first Sunday, please don't panic. We get these messages up online. If you have lots of free time and want to listen to me talk for 30 or 40 minutes, you can do that. The first couple of weeks will be up there soon. The first few verses of Colossians chapter 3, Paul talks about a mindset that you've got to change your mind. You've got to stop thinking the old way and think in a new way. We think about everything that is right in front of our face and we miss the forest for the trees. We stay so grounded in everyday challenges that we don't get enough elevation to be able to see what God is doing in the whole picture. He says, stop being so focused on the earthly stuff. Start focusing on things that matter. That's the first thing that he says. That was our first week. Our second week, we talked about what it is that you do now. Paul says, once you think differently, you've got to act different. You've got to be different. You've got to put aside all of those things, all of the old ways of thinking and being, all of the old ways of doing. Even though you are surrounded by it and you once walked in it, these things were once a part of you. He's already speaking as if the future were on you now. He's saying, you used to be this way, but you're not anymore. You used to walk in things like anger and malice. You used to walk in things like greed. You used to walk in things like sexual sin. You used to walk in things like slander and abusive speech. Y'all used to cuss. You didn't think nobody could hear you, but the Holy Spirit was there the whole time. Y'all used to get frustrated, but now you don't. Or if you do, it's in a different way. Your mouths are cleaner. Your thoughts are more focused and they're cleaner. And you've got to act a different way. People should see a difference in how you are and who you are. Get your mind right. Start doing differently. And then this next section, he talks about how you've got to get control of your feelings. Now see, we struggle with that because our feelings run us. Our feelings are the litmus test for what is true and what is not. If we don't feel it, can't do it. If I feel it enough, I'm going to do it whether I think it's a bad idea or not. We think that our feeling comes first. Before there's ever a thought, we have a feeling, and it's our feeling that drives the things that we think and the things that we do. And Paul says, nope. Get your mind right, do different, and then feel differently. These are verses 12 through 4, Colossians chapter 3. I'm in the New American Standard. Don't panic if your version doesn't match mine. So, as those who have been chosen of God, holy and beloved, put on a heart of compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness and patience, bearing with one another and forgiving each other. Whoever has a complaint against anyone, just as the Lord forgave you, so also should you. Beyond all these things, put on love, which is the perfect bond of unity. As I always do, I want to draw your attention to the order of the words. I say this all the time because at some point you're going to grasp onto it and things are going to begin to make a little bit more sense to you. Paul loves a list. This guy, when he wrote, first of all, he loved sentences that were a page long. I feel confident that somebody had to edit that mess and they were like, no commas, this needs a parenthesis, here's a semicolon. He just had these super run-on sentences. When Paul would give you a new teaching or a new thought or a new whatever in a list of words, it's very important to note that the first thing is the most important. Without it, the rest are going to be very challenging. But the last thing that he mentions holds all the things together. It's all one. It all interworks. It kind of builds. Sometimes you miss some of those pieces. Sometimes you're better at the other pieces. But ultimately, if you follow it, if you follow the way that he sets it up, you realize, wow, this is how things work. These things work in combination with one another to create a whole different thing. He says that we have to put on, and I want you to pay attention here. As a person, he is saying, put on compassion. Let compassion be the foundation of who you are to other people. Compassion is being aware of and sympathetic to someone else's distress and having a desire to do something about it. That's the difference between compassion and pity. Pity, you feel for somebody. Well, I'm sorry for you. But there's no motivation for you to step in. There's no motivation for you to be used. There's no motivation for you to be the hands or the feet. You just look at that person and go, so sorry for them. And let's be real, there's a part of you that says, I'm glad that's not me. That's a different sermon. Let me move on. Compassion is feeling for someone, being in that with them a little bit, and having a desire to do something to help them. Paul says, put on compassion. Put on kindness. kindness is compassion in action. It is hard to be kind for someone that you can't feel for. I know. We do kind things for people that we don't know. That's not what I'm talking about. You have to take it a step further. Kindness is being compassionate, the act of, to someone. That's what kindness is. It's to be kind is to help in some way. I'm sure y'all all know people who are struggling with their bills. You don't have the money to pay everybody's bills. But being kind is helping in some way. With a word, with an email, with a text, with encouragement. What if you mowed their lawn? I hate to mow a lawn. But what if you mowed their lawn? What if one time you heard something that they need that they just can't quite put together and you went and got that thing for them? To be kind is to help in some way. Maybe monetarily, maybe with just love in action, maybe with just a word. Kindness is action. Paul says, put on humility. Humility is a tough one because we get concerned. When Paul starts talking about humility, he talks about being submitted. Not submissive. And that's what we hear. We don't want to be too humble. Don't want to be too humble because not going to let anybody walk on me. I'm nobody's doormat. I don't want you to take advantage of me. He's not saying be submissive to. He's not saying lay down in front of. He's saying be submitted to. Let someone else have a higher place in your mind than you do. That's hard. But isn't that what Jesus calls us to do? When he says we are to be submitted. Submission is tough. That's what humility is. To think of another person as higher than yourself. He says put on gentleness. The opposite of gentleness in my book is abrasiveness. Anybody know an abrasive person? Like, you know you're supposed to say hello to them. But you say that from a distance, ready to run if necessary. You're like, hey, because you don't know what might be coming. You know folks who just speak their mind, no filter. I can appreciate sometimes I need somebody to just tell me like it is. But I don't need you to tell me like it is 24/7, 365. Every once in a while, consider my feelings, my brother or sister, before you bring your truth into my life. How about that? Be gentle. Put on gentleness. We don't have to be so rough. We don't have to be so pointed. We don't have to be so angry sometimes. We get angry with people who don't do right. So we can't be gentle with them anymore. We got to tell them like it is. I'm just going to tell you like it is. And our backup for that is Jesus did it to the Pharisees. That's what we tell ourselves. Jesus was rude to the Pharisees. That's a whole different context, man. That's a whole different thing. We have to be gentle with people. Paul says, if you are compassionate, then you can be kind. And if you can be kind, then you can be humble. You can be a person of humility. And if you can be humble and have humility in your heart, then you can be gentle with people. Don't have to be abrasive all the time. He says, put on gentleness and put on patience. This is where it breaks down for me. A little bit. This is where I'm with all those others. I'm with the layers. That last layer is this thin sometimes. It should be orange peel. It's more like grape skin. You know what I'm saying? Like it's thin. We have to be patient. We have to be able to. And he says it just after he says patient, he says bearing with one another. That's the same. That's the reason I say that there are seven and not eight. Because forbearance, bearing with one another, requires patience. It is the heart of patience. It is patience in action. Being patient with someone. How many times have you prayed for somebody to change and they just won't let that prayer be real for them? They won't let that. You can see it in front of their face. I heard a pastor once say that he had a daughter. PKs, man. Preacher's kids, you got to be careful. In my experience, if you're a preacher's kid, you think some type of way about how you're going to live your life and maybe it'll match or it won't. But this pastor was talking about his daughter who just departed the teachings of her youth. She was just determined to live her life unto herself. And he could see the events coming to a head in her life. It was like watching his kid get on stand on the train tracks and wait for the train. And there was nothing that he could do about it. And it was so hard for him to just be patient and just to bear with her. I've told you stories about my sibling, my sister, who just for decades wrecked her own life. She would undermine everything that she did and then cry out to God. it was so hard for me to be patient with her. I'm so grateful that God is patient with me. I'm so grateful that he doesn't just loom over me or put that hand of judgment on me. He is just patient. He waits for me to see where he is going. He doesn't move too fast. He doesn't run around the corner and then play that whole find me game. We've got to be people of patience. We've got to put patience on. He says, forgiving each other, whoever has a complaint against anyone, just as the Lord forgave you, so also should you forgive. Now we got real deep. Because forgiveness means very specifically a release from legal penalties attached to offense. It's the same legal term as pardon. You're guilty of something and yet are set free. You deserve to do time. There is punishment, rational punishment, attached to the whatever you did, whatever rule you broke. There's a price that has to be paid, and yet you are forgiven that price. You don't have to spend that time locked away. You're pardoned for a crime that you committed. And Paul is saying, whoever has beef, whoever's got an issue with one another, let that go. Forgive that person. Give them pardon, even if they're guilty of offense. No, thank you. I will hold on to my unforgiveness. I will compress it like a diamond, and I will make a beautiful statue of bitterness, which I will then put on my mantle and gaze at fondly every time I think of that person. That person is not affected by my bitterness at all. My friend Moses said that unforgiveness, choosing unforgiveness, is like drinking poison and waiting for the other person to die. Moses, that stuck with me. Can you imagine that? I'm going to shoot myself and go bleed out. What's wrong with you? Why aren't you dying? We have got to put on forgiveness. Folks, some of us have been hurt in ways that have defined us. Some of you have hurt which have determined the course of your life. Some of you have hurt which have just wrecked relationships for you, which have clouded your future. Some of you have been hurt, and the people who hurt you deserve to pay a price. And Paul is saying you have got to pardon that offense. That's part of the old self. That old software is corrupted. You've got to let that go. And then the seventh and the last thing that he says is, put on love. Beyond all these things, put on love, which is the perfect bond of unity. Love is the tie that binds. It's the tie that binds us all. This, pun intended, is the heart of the update. It's the heart of the new self. But being compassionate to those who love you, being kind to those who think like you do, being gentle with those who look like you do, and having patience with those who act like you do is not that difficult. Except if you're raising children. Let me give my parents a break here. Because sometimes you're just pleading on the floor in the bathroom saying, Lord, kill me! No, that's you're not. That can be challenging. But for real, if they think like you do, speak like you do, look like you do, if they already love you, being those things to those people, that's not really a challenge. But what about those who live their lives in opposition to God's will? I'm not talking about those who don't know better. I can love an unsaved person who doesn't know better. That's okay. Those folks out there who are doing the best that they can to live a moral life. I was having a conversation this morning about good people. There are good people out there, people who just have that deep-seated sense of morals, which, by the way, is God's compass for us. That's level one. So I would say that people who are moral are already living in the vein of God's will. Low level, not there, don't have the relationship yet. But morality comes from God. He is the lawgiver. It's got to come from somewhere. So moral people who are good people, good for them. I can love those folks who don't know better. What about the people who do know better and just live as my father used to say, crosswise in the pipe, intentionally. How do we love those people? How do we love people who vilify the church and everything that she stands for? If you're in here this morning and you believe that there's any literal truth in the Bible, you're a fundamentalist. Congratulations. Welcome to the club. Because we believe that there might be literal truth in our book makes us fundamentalists. Means we're capable of anything. We'll do whatever it takes to make you believe what we believe. What about people who attack the church? What about people who use every vein of politics and sociology, whatever they culture, whatever they want, the people who come for us, the people who come for you and your faith? Can you love those people? Can you be gentle with them? Can you be patient with them? Can you forgive them their ignorance and their vile bitterness? Can we put on these things? Can we create this new self and love people no matter what? I had dinner very recently with a couple friends. Beautiful people, much older couple, people that I have looked at as role models in faith. People who have been married for forever, loving God, serving God in all different kinds of ways. Both of them just retired, and they're so grateful. Having dinner with them and catching up on old things. We have a lot of connections from college. Where I went at Emmanuel College. We have a lot of connections there. Talking about things, talking about life. And then the lady says she's so excited because she's going to take a trip to a place that she's never been. And I said, really, why have you guys never been there? Because there's a person there that I just cannot stand. What? I just could not bring myself to go to this place because there's a person there that I can't stand him. So I just couldn't even. You couldn't go to a geographic locale? You couldn't go to a different place in these United States because there was one person in that whole area that you couldn't stand? What you think? You're going to drive across the border and it's going to get on you? What is happening? And I just kind of, thank God for training. I went through this whole 5 years of training, and part of that training was no matter what that person in front of you says, just have a good look on your face. I went through, and so that my training came to the fore and said, shut your mouth and squint your eyes a little bit, because right now you look like an idiot. That training came to the fore, and I just went, okay. In my heart, I was thinking, what? That person apparently was no longer there. So now they can go and visit that place. This is a person that I know loves the Lord. This is a person that I know can do ministry because I've seen it. This is a person who has been effective from a Christocentric standpoint, not just from a, hey, I'm a good person, but from a person of, I love Jesus and I believe in Jesus and let me minister to you out of that. This person who had touched hundreds of lives can't go to a town where a person is they don't like. My God, what are we doing? Can we put on these things and love this world? Because that's how he loves you. He is the embodiment of all of these things for you. And we are called to be the very image of he who made us. There's an update that is available to you and me. It's a new self, and it comes with a whole list, a bunch of promises about new abilities that you'll have, about improvements to your life. It will bring new code into you to fix all of those broken places, which shouldn't be there because of the price that was paid for you, but they're there anyway. It comes with a new way of thinking. It comes with a new way of behaving. And thank God it comes with a new way of feeling. Let me ask you this morning, what is keeping you from putting on this new self? What's keeping you from it? Because I promise you, you have a good reason. There's a good reason. There's a good reason. If you're in the body of Christ for any length of time, after a while you begin to realize, okay, either I'm going to do this or I'm not. I mean, that's this whole fly-by-night thing where I just kind of come in and get an emotional pop, feels good, and And then I go live, but this is not working for me. I need something more. If you really dedicate and commit, at some point in time, you begin to understand that there's stuff that's in you that's got to come up out of you, that's got to go away. There's stuff that's got to come out because it's keeping you from experiencing all the stuff that you read about, all the stuff that you hear about, all these things that you hear are available to you, these promises that you want to take advantage of. And if there's stuff in there blocking it, you have to deal with that. But that's really hard when the reason that you've got is good. I have a good reason for not putting on this. I'm a target. I'm a victim. I'm broken. I can't ever seem to get ahead. It's like a domino effect in my life, Pastor. When one bad thing happens, it just goes knock, 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 knock. I spend my life walking around with my shoulders hunched, waiting for the second shoe to drop. Whatever your analogy, whatever works for you, insert that here. You've got a good reason. But what if? What if? Just suspend your belief for a second. Disbelief. Suspend your disbelief for a second. Suspend your disbelief. What if? What if this new self could change your reason? What if putting on these things? What if putting on true compassion, allowing yourself to feel what another person feels, to be with them and then have a desire to help them in that moment? What if that could begin to uproot, begin to undermine, begin to break apart whatever this reason is you have for not putting on the new self? What if your compassion came out of you in kindness? What if you were able to see yourself in a different way, really get an idea, some good perspective of where you are in just the whole scale of the thing, and some humility began to come in to your life? What if you could be gentle? What if you could be patient, truthfully? And what if putting on this new self really began to dissolve whatever was happening? What if you had to choose first before you felt it? He said, get your mind right. Start doing different. Then start feeling different. What do you need for God to do for you today? What do you need for him to do? You want this new self. You want this update. You are ready to press okay. You are ready for the whole reboot thing to happen. I know I keep pushing this analogy, but that's really what it's like. It's from the inside out, and it's full systems. It's everything has to change. What do you need him to do? Because I promise you, he's here for you. I promise you, it's not by your own strength, not by your own might, not by your own power, but by the Spirit of God, you can be changed. Father, all over this room, I pray, God, that people are looking deep within inside themselves, deep inside. I pray, God, that there is a growing desire for this new self. Pray, Father, there's a growing need for the new self. I pray, God, that there's already begun to be a separation between this person and that old self. I pray, Father, they are beginning to see the aspects of the old self that are not working for them in life. Pray, God, they're beginning to see the things that need to change about the way that they think. There are patterns of thought that they are stuck in. There are ways that they think about things that are not helpful. I pray, God, they would begin to get some distance from the old self so they can look back and see how that thinking is wrong. I pray, God, they would begin to see how some of their behavior just continually disappoints them. They keep trying to meet their own needs and it keeps coming to a dead end. They keep searching for something fulfilling and they'll go to any lengths to get it. And every time that they get it, they're left more empty than before they found it. And I pray, God, that people would begin to see how what is happening in their heart is just sabotaging your will for their lives. We need the new self. We need the new self, Father. And we need you to work and to move power of your Spirit in our hearts and in our minds today, and begin to undermine, begin to disassemble begin to break apart whatever that really good reason is that we have for living in the old self. Begin to cast doubt by the light of your love on that thing. We need your new self. We need the new self. We need to step away from the old way of doing things. And I pray, God, in this moment, that that process is happening. You're struggling with the most in this moment, my friend, my brother, my sister, that you keep trying because that's all you've known. You keep moving forward, and that's a good thing, but you keep trying. You keep trying to earn it. You keep trying to put it to death. You keep trying to cover it over. You keep trying. Father, in your mercy and in your love, I pray that you would insert yourself into that situation, into that person, into that issue, so that this person can have rest as you go in and you do a work. Do your work of grace. Do your work of grace, God, I pray, so that the old self can be cast off, laid aside, as your servant Paul said, and the new self can be put on. We want the available update, God, and all the promises that come with it. Fix this broken code in our hearts. Help us, God, we pray. In Jesus' name, amen.